Gaetz, the biggest firebrand inside of the House of Representatives.
You're not taking Matt Gaetz off the board, okay? Because Matt Gaetz is an American patriot and Matt Gaetz is an American hero.
We will not continue to allow the Uniparty to run this town without a fight.
I want to thank you, Matt Gaetz, for holding the line.
Matt Gaetz is a courageous man. If we had hundreds of Matt Gaetz in D.C., the country turns around. It's that simple.
He's so tough. He's so strong. He's smart, and he loves this country. Matt Gaetz.
It is the honor of my life to fight alongside each and every one of you. We will save America. It's Choose Your Fighter time. Send in the firebrands.
Explain to us what happened with you and Kevin McCarthy.
Well, I was doing an interview with Claudia from NPR, a lovely lady, and she was asking me a question. And at that time, I got elbowed in the back, and it kind of caught me off guard because it was a clean shot to the kidneys. And I turned back, and there was Kevin. And I for a minute, I was kind of, what the heck just happened? And then I chased after him, of course. He's a... As I've stated many times, he's a bully with $17 million in a security detail. You know, he's the type of guy that, when you're a kid, would throw a rock over the fence and run home and hide behind his mama's skirt. And he just, you know, he from behind, that kind of stuff. It, you know, that's not the way we handle things in East Tennessee. We if we have a problem with somebody, I'm going to look them in the eye and talk to him.
Okay, so he walked down the hallway, hit you in his elbow.
Yeah, you can go on Claudia's Twitter account, it pretty much, or X account, it's very accurate. But,
okay, so then just explain. So you chased him? What do you mean you chased
him? I just ran after him. I was like, what the heck? You know, why'd you do that? You know, because it was, like I said, if you've ever been hit in the kidneys, it's a little different. You don't have to hit very hard to cause a little bit of pain, a lot of pain. And he just, of course, as he always does, he just denies it or blame somebody else or something, you know, and it was just a little heated, but I just backed off because I saw no reason. I wasn't gaining anything from it. And then everybody saw it, so it didn't really matter.
Like he responded to you?
Yeah. He just acted like, you know, what are you talking about? You know, who are you to, you know, that kind of thing. And it's just, you know, I think that's symptomatic of the problems that he's had in his short tenure as speaker.
And were you face to face when you had this interaction?
Yeah, but there's security detail, and I get it. They were doing their job, so it wasn't exactly like he wouldn't turn around and face me. He kept scurrying, trying to keep people between me and him.
And then so, were you?
I just let it go at that point. It wasn't.
Were you yelling?
I raised my voice to him. I thought it was appropriate. You know, you just don't expect a guy who was at one time three steps away from the White House to hit you with a sucker punch in the hallway.
And did he raise his voice back to you?
Yeah, just that high-pitched kind of thing, I believe, and that was about it.
And did he walk into his office? How did this end?
No, he just kept on walking down the hall. I don't know where his office is now. Hmm. And you know, he had his detail and his posse, so to speak, was with him.
So did his detail try to stop you?
Do what?
Did his detail try to stop you?
The detail kind of got... one guy got between us there towards the end, but I wasn't looking to knock him out or anything. I just wanted to let him know I know it was him.
Were you injured?
I don't know, injured, man.
Did it hurt?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it still hurts because it was a shot to the kidneys, and it still hurts. Oddly enough, it's not anything I'm probably not gonna do an ethics complaint on him. He's not worth it. You know, he's going to be gone here either after Christmas or next year. And like I said, you know, he's got the $17 million, and he's going to keep, you know, he's already messing in everybody's races, and we all know that.
Are you accusing him of assault?
Am I accusing him?
Of assault?
I don't know. Ask a lawyer. It's over as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm.
He said to our colleague Melina Zanona that this was a tight hallway. He denies this interaction. He says a tight hallway, and I bumped into him. He says that this was not an intentional thing.
There's 435 congressmen. I was one of eight that voted against him. That hallway was, there's plenty of room. You can walk four side by side. He chose to do what he did. And, you know, it'll end right here, I'm sure. It'll just be a little asterisk on his storied career.
All right, we are live. Welcome to Firebrand. This is Matt Gaetz. We are broadcasting out of room 2021 of the Rayburn House office building here in the Capitol Complex in Washington, D.C. That was Congressman Tim Burchett talking to CNN's Manu Raju about an altercation he had with Kevin McCarthy. We're going to get into it. This has been a wild day on Capitol Hill. We're going to walk you through some of the strangest reports we have ever had about member behavior and goings-on in committees. I don't know if there's a full moon or if Mercury is in retrograde, Joel. Isn't that what you said? Gets everybody acting crazy? But something is up, and we're going to go over that in addition to some of the key findings of the Homeland Security Committee's report on the costs of illegal immigration. We've got testimony from USAID about how your money is being spent in Ukraine. Big things also exploding in the House Oversight Committee today. But when the former speaker is pushing people in the back that they don't like, it's definitely top of mind with a lot of folks. Karen on Facebook says that I'm just stirring the pot and I need to do my job. Well, we're going to be getting to all of it, Karen. But first, you heard Burchett there go over this this altercation. And the key fact that doesn't make this a he said, she said, is that an NPR reporter, Claudia Grisales, actually was interviewing Burchett during the whole deal. She put up a tweet thread detailing her firsthand evidentiary account of this altercation between McCarthy and Burchett. So I'm now reading from the report from Claudia Grisales of NPR. I have never seen this on Capitol Hill. While talking to Tim Burchett after the GOP conference meeting, former Speaker McCarthy walked by with his detail, and McCarthy shoved Burchett. Burchett lunged toward me. I thought it was a joke. It was not, and a chase ensued. Burchett's back was to McCarthy, and his detail was walking by in the hallway, then the lunge. Burchett responded jokingly as McCarthy kept walking. Sorry, Kevin, didn't mean to elbow. Then seriously yelled, why'd you elbow me in the back, Kevin? Hey, Kevin, you got any guts? Burchett then looked back at me and said, jerk, referring to McCarthy. I asked if he had done this before. Burchett said no. That's when the chase ensued. Burchett took off after McCarthy in his detail. I chased behind with my mic. So it goes over all of the back and forth between McCarthy and Burchett, but that is the firsthand report account of this NPR reporter. And of course, she posted with her story the audio of that encounter just described by her, by Burchett. Here's even more evidence. Take a listen.
Yeah, I think it went all right.
Sorry, Kevin, didn't mean to elbow. Why'd you elbow me in the back, Kevin?
I know, I felt so bad.
Hey, Kevin, you got any guts?
Jerk.
Has he done that before?
No.
Huh. That's a new move.
I'm gonna go talk to him.
You got no guts. You did so. They sat there, and the reporter said it right there. What kind of chicken move is that? You're pathetic, man. You are so pathetic. What a jerk. You need security, Kevin. Anyway.
We're back live, and it does beg the question, why does Kevin McCarthy have a security detail in the first place? Like, he's not the speaker anymore. Mark on Facebook wants Kevin McCarthy charged with assault. Deborah on YouTube says, hopefully, McCarthy has to face an ethics complaint as a result of this. And Deborah, we're way ahead of you. We have submitted to the House Ethics Committee the information regarding these reports, this evidence, these firsthand accounts. And McCarthy has sought to weaponize the Ethics Committee. He sought to signal to them that the thing that they ought to do to try to cover for his failings as Speaker was to attack me. You heard in a lot of the Manu Raju Kevin McCarthy therapy session, him reference that I'm just an ethically challenged person. First of all, it seems as though the therapy session that McCarthy had with Manu Raju didn't take and didn't work. There's other video you're going to see today where Kevin McCarthy is responding directly to these accounts from this reporter and from Burchett. And when someone's lying, their register goes up in their voice. And he is squealing like a stuck pig when answering these questions. Kevin McCarthy is a frequent liar, but that does not mean that he's a good liar. He's actually a bad liar. You could tell when he's lying, and it's just absolutely laid bare before everyone to see. And I think the Ethics Committee should take a look at that conduct, because we shouldn't be in a body where we don't use our words, right? Like, when we came at McCarthy, it was based on the substance of an agreement we made in January and his inability to comport with that agreement. We came right at him. I gave a speech on the floor. I said, this is what you have to do to avoid a motion to vacate. And instead, we got this bizarre spasm of profanity and false bravado. Now he's been removed. And like, Kevin McCarthy went from pushing around millions of dollars in lobbyist money to pushing Tim Burchett in the back. Like, how the mighty have fallen. There was also weirdness today in the United States Senate. Mark Wayne Mullen, I've never really seen this guy get worked up about like the fentanyl crisis, the national debt, but he got all kinds of exercised against a union witness today in the United States Senate. Take a listen.
It's like he's self-made. Sir, I wish he was in the truck with me when I was building my plumbing company. Myself and my wife was running the office, because I sure remember working pretty hard and long hours. Pretends like he's self-made. What a clown. Fraud. Always has been, always will be. Quit the tough guy act and these Senate hearings. You know where to find me. Any place, any time, cowboy. Sir, this is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
Oh, hold on. Oh, stop it.
Is that your solution? Every poll?
No, no, sit down. Sit down. Okay. You know, you're a United States Senator. Sit down.
Actively.
Oh, okay.
Sit down, please.
All right.
Can I respond, Mr.
Chairman? Hold it. Hold it. If we can, no, I have the mic. I'm sorry.
This is what he said.
You'll have your time.
Okay.
Can I respond?
Oh, no, you can't.
I've never quite seen anything like that in a United States Senate hearing. Red on YouTube says the Oklahoma senator's outburst was weird. I thought it was weird too. I have frequently used the statements of witnesses in the past to impeach them, but I tried to use like my brain and my words and logic and reason, tying that to some consequence, maybe defunding things that aren't working. But like Mark Wayne Mullen beating some guy's ass who doesn't like him in a Senate committee room isn't going to help his constituents. It's not going to ensure that we're in any better position. You know what, Mark Wayne Mullen, if you want to fight, let's actually get into the fights that matter on our budget, on our border, where you've been kind of noticeably absent. So with Mark Wayne Mullen, it's a lot of tough talk. That was a real strange display. And maybe the hero of that entire exchange was Bernie Sanders. Who knows? Kind of the get off my lawn old grandfather type telling him to sit down. There were also fireworks today in the House Oversight Committee hearing. And to set the backdrop here, you know, Chairman Comer has laid out how the Biden family has really engaged in widespread corruption, international influence peddling. And the common refrain from Democrats defending Joe Biden is that, well, they might have been involved in that influence peddling, but Joe never got the benefit. Well, now we've got the bank records and the actual check to Joe Biden, where the gains were ill-gotten and then sent from a different family member to Joe Biden. Jared Moskowitz is a Democrat from Florida. He then found out that the Comer family has an interfamily loan as well. And Moskowitz is making the claim against Chairman Comer that there's some sort of hypocrisy. But that is absurd when you consider the fact that in the Comer family, there is no allegation that the gain is ill-gotten. Right, that is why it is relevant and important as to Joe Biden, but it's just family as it relates to people who aren't engaged in the foreign corrupt influence peddling. I think that could have been easily explained, but instead, we got this. Take a listen.
But you and Goldman, who is Mr. Trust Fund, continue to try
reclaiming my time.
No, I'm not going to give you your time back. We can stop the clock. You all continue to, you look like a Smurf here just going around and all this stuff. Now listen.
Mr. Chairman, you have.
I'm going to tell you something.
No, hold on. If we're not on time,
we can spew disinformation.
You have gone on TV and said the president did something illegal. You're doing stuff with your brother. The American people have the same questions. Why should they believe you? Why should they believe you? Why should they believe you? There's a different rule for the president. There's a different rule for you. Why should they believe what you're saying, Mr. Chairman? Why? You go on Fox News and say loans
you
and deals are a way to evade taxes. We don't know if that's what you're doing or not. We don't know. We have no idea. We're supposed to take your word for it. But when the president says something,
you've already been proven a liar, Mr. Moskowitz.
What's that?
You've already been proven a liar.
Who's proven me a liar? You?
Yes.
Your word means nothing, Mr. Chairman.
Go to my hometown. There's a camera crew there today, an opposition research crew there today.
Mr. Chairman, this seems to have gotten under your skin.
I'll pay for your ticket.
I think the American people have lots of questions, Mr. Chairman, and perhaps you should sit maybe for a deposition.
I will be happy.
That was spicy. A lot of you on the live stream right now are asking questions about impeachment. You're angry that the impeachment of Mayorkas was tabled when eight Republicans joined with Democrats to table it. I, too, share your frustration about that. We've talked a lot about how Mayorkas deserves impeachment. Matter of fact, we've got a big report in moments we're going to go over from the Homeland Security Committee. But when Marjorie Taylor Greene brings these votes to the floor, whether it's impeaching Mayorkas or Ray, Garland, Biden, Harris, here's what she's showing you. And you're not going to like hearing this, but it's the truth. We don't have the votes to impeach anyone right now. We've got a lot of Republicans who do not believe that the impeachment tool should be used against these folks. And I'm left wondering, what accountability tool are you waiting for? We allow a lot of these folks to evade subpoenas. We haven't brought contempt to the floor when we've been jerked around. We always allow them to show up at the last second. No real accountability, no real punishment. And then on the budget, you're going to see Democrats and Republicans today voting together to just continue the budgetary priorities of Joe Biden and the policies of Nancy Pelosi. Are you punishing them there? And now, impeachment off the table. So for all of the discussion about how much these folks deserve impeachment, and many of them do, it's not going to happen with this team of House Republicans. It's just not. That is a fact. There are facts that have been suppressed on another matter I want to discuss, and that is the vaccine. So yesterday, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene really stepped forward with great leadership and led a committee hearing on vaccine injuries. And I worry about even sharing with you the things that are actually going on in Congress about this subject, because you never know, on the platforms where you are consuming this podcast, the censorship has gotten so bad, we're even pointing out what medical professionals and congressional witnesses are saying. Even citing senators can somehow get you tagged or labeled or ticketed, shadow banned, censored. But you need to know what is happening. I think Dr. Robert Malone has done some of the most extensive research on vaccine injuries. He's seen how widespread they are. This was the evidence he presented to Congress yesterday. Take a listen.
And I think the Operation Warp Speed, the idea that, look, we need to move with a sense of urgency, maybe not at the pace that government is historically not very effective at, seemed appealing up front. But now with the benefit of hindsight, could we assess that Warp Speed was successful or not?
In my opinion, what we've learned, remember, it's now 4 years. In my opinion, what we've learned is that the collective wisdom of decades of regulatory science as it relates to vaccines and other medical products was appropriate. There is a reason why these products typically require up to a decade to be proven to be safe and effective. And it was not prudent and not in the interests of protecting the citizens of the United States or the world to bypass those time-tested processes that have basically been agreed upon through various forms of informal international treaties in order to, my words are, jam a product through a process in order to get it out to respond to a false threat. Remember, the underlying thesis here is that we had 3.4% case fatality rate. This was told to us again and again and again, and it was a lie.
So let's stay on that question of the fatality rate and how many of our fellow Americans were the victims of a process that Dr. Malone just described there as jammed through. I think some of the most searing data in this committee hearing on vaccine injuries came from Senator Ron Johnson, who joined us with this presentation. Take a listen.
This is CDC and FDA's own numbers, and yet, you know, through all the social media censorship directed by, unconstitutionally directed by the Biden administration, people just don't want to see this, but these are the true numbers. The first five drugs that are listed here, this is over 28 years of reporting on the VAERS system and the FAER system, the FDA adverse event reporting system. You can see ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine are pretty safe drugs, as is dexamethasone. The two drugs below, this is since the COVID pandemic, remdesivir and the COVID vaccines. Now, I don't know how anybody can take a look at our response to COVID and not claim it was anything but a miserable failure. We're 4% of the world's population, we experienced supposedly 16% of the deaths. The VAERS system on the COVID vaccines alone, 1.6 million adverse events.
Now, we also had practicing physicians there, and one area that Congresswoman Green focused in on was obstetrics. When doctors are dealing with pregnant women, the creation of life, certainly injections, vaccines, particularly with this type of therapy, should draw the strictest of scrutiny. And we had an OBGYN, Dr. Biss, before us with very concerning results that she analyzed from her practice and beyond. Take a listen to Dr. Biss.
My average miscarriage rate in 2020 month to month was 4%. That was normal. I had done a video where I wrongly said that my miscarriage rate had increased by 50% because I was put on the spot and I didn't have my data in front of me. I was wrong. My miscarriage rate from year to year went up 100%. In 2021, the average miscarriage rate month to month was 7 to 8%. We peaked in November of that year for some reason. That's actually when a non-clinical staff member came up to me and said, Dr. Biss, do you realize we've had 8 miscarriages this month? Which in a practice that delivers 20 to 25 patients, that's a huge number. In 2022, the average month-to-month rate was 15%. Now, that was up till November. I will tell you, in December, I've never seen this before. We had 41 newly registered patients. 13 of them lost their babies, so that's 25% right there. And then in January and February of 2023, it still remained high. Didn't normalize until June of this year, then went up a little bit and came down in September. So we're still seeing effects. You asked how many patients had the vaccine and then lost their babies. That's hard to determine. I mean, I can tell you 60% of my patients got vaccinated. But the problem is, if they're brand new to the practice, I haven't seen them yet because I'm the only person in my practice that asks every patient, have you gotten a vaccine? How many? Which brand? When? Have you had COVID? How many times? Because whether we like it or not, that's part of your medical history now. I'm the only one that asks those questions.
We're back live. Thank you, Dr. Biss, for asking those key questions so that we can start to correlate this data. When you hear these high rates of miscarriages, when you hear about the devastating health consequences that Senator Johnson discussed, your heart goes out and you wonder, well, what can we even start to do to remediate this great harm that people may have suffered and may be able to prove in a court of law. There was even an attorney who joined us. And what frustrates me is that too much of what the Congress has been doing from a policy standpoint has been to shield big pharma from liability when they cause harm. And I think there is corruption at the core of that. It was the substance of my contribution to this hearing. Take a listen.
Dr. Malone, one of my grave concerns is that all of the vaccine injured may not know that they are in the class of the vaccine injured, because people get blood clots and pulmonary embolisms, probably because of the vaccine, but also probably for other reasons as well. And Dr. Biss, when we look at these tragic consequences of pregnancy, they can at times occur in the absence of a vaccine. So what advice would you give us as policymakers to try to really disaggregate the symptoms of vaccine injury and those consequences from those that may have occurred otherwise?
Thank you, Mr. Gates, for your informed question. You are correct in saying that it is an enormous challenge. Just as the virus disease itself largely overlaps with what's called the common cold now in terms of symptoms, and it's very difficult to distinguish. Likewise, these clusters of symptoms are very difficult to distinguish from background noise in some cases. That's the job of the CDC, by the way, is to provide that type of analysis objectively in a nonpartisan fashion. And as even the New York Times has acknowledged, the CDC has become a partisan political operation. So we are left in the absence of reliable data by a federal agency tasked to provide that data to allow the discernment of your question. And the way that this would normally be done is to look for clusters of symptoms that correlate with a known disease or toxicity, and then identify patients who have those clusters. Practicing physicians currently, even those that aren't subject to the many professional and financial disincentives to be open and transparent about these things that you're mentioning, I'm choosing my words, are subjected to an enormous amount of not only propaganda or psyops, as has the entire public been subjected to it, but also enormous numbers of disincentives to disclose adverse events and disclose what might appear to be vaccine-related problems.
I hate to interrupt you, but that should be illegal. It should be illegal if someone is engaged in the practice of medicine or in the highly regulated pharmaceutical industry for people to try to disincentivize access to the information. And it's easy for us to blame the CDC, but frankly, they in a way work for us because we're the ones that authorize the funds for the things that they do and don't do. And so, I think that one of the things we got to work on probably is legislation that directs them to those data, to those clusters, and that then disallows the corrupt activities that you seem to be highlighting.
We're back live. That shows how high the hill is to climb indeed, and we will stay on that work. Again, thank you to Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene for setting up that field hearing to get us that evidence and begin what is going to be a long road ahead for a lot of people. We also have news regarding the continuing resolution that the House is going to be voting on very soon to have a stopgap funding measure. Yesterday's episode went into the detail of what that includes and doesn't include, and really detailed out my critique of that continuing resolution. And on the heels of it, we have a statement that we want to share with you, released today from the House Freedom Caucus, titled, "No More Rolling Over Today to Fight Tomorrow." Today, the House Freedom Caucus released the following official position. The House Freedom Caucus opposes the proposed clean continuing resolution as it contains no spending reductions, no border security, and not a single meaningful win for the American people. Republicans must stop negotiating against ourselves over fears of what the Senate may do with the promise to roll over today and we'll fight tomorrow. While we remain committed to working with Speaker Johnson, we need bold change. That from the House Freedom Caucus today. I am in full agreement. with that statement. I endorse it completely, even though I'm not a member of the House Freedom Caucus. I often align on these big fights about the budget, and I'm glad the House Freedom Caucus is in the fight. We need more House Republicans in that battle. I had a good conversation today with Budget Chairman Jody Arrington, and he really wants to move a balanced budget to the floor that not only addresses some of the discretionary spending, but a lot of the entitlement spending. And we have to have honest discussions about where we are going from a fiscal standpoint, because if we don't, then you live in a time where you earn what you earn. You have earned what you earn. You have what you have. But each and every day, your government is printing billions more dollars and diluting your life and your money and your savings. And the government does that without even the hint of itemized review on the programs that are sucking up so much of this money. So we've got to get on that. One of the things that really is reflective of the waste of federal spending, USAID. USAID is an entity that takes your money and functions as a global venture capital fund overlaid with a hell of a lot of wokeness. And now you've got testimony from a top Biden official at USAID saying that we need to print more money and dilute your dollar so that we save the Ukrainians from inflation. Take a listen.
At this time, there is no funding left for direct budget support. Without further appropriations, the government of Ukraine would need to use emergency measures such as printing money or not paying critical salaries, which could lead to hyperinflation and severely damage the war effort. USAID has also exhausted all of its supplemental humanitarian assistance funds. Additional funding is critical in the face of what remains an enormous need. If Congress does not approve supplemental funding, our partner organizations in Ukraine would have to either reduce the number of people getting this humanitarian assistance by up to 75% or suspend our humanitarian programs entirely.
This was such an insane statement. I had to go and read the testimony of this USAID official. They want you to print more money and suffer more inflation so that the Ukrainians don't have to print more money and suffer more inflation. And we're borrowing money that we don't print from China. Remember the neoconservative geopolitics group smart think around the theory that we've got to get bogged down in Ukraine so that we look rough and tough to China? I subscribe to the theory that us being bogged down in Ukraine makes us look weaker to China. It makes us look distracted. And when we're harming our own economy through inflation or harming our own national security by going deeper in debt to China to fund the Ukraine apparatus, it is so insulting to have the American taxpayer confronted with testimony like this. We've also recently been confronted with a key report from the House Committee on Homeland Security. It's a bombshell that breaks down how the American taxpayer is on the hook for up to $451 billion needed to care for illegal immigrants now making their home inside of our borders because of Joe Biden's broken border policy. The report's infuriating. Line after line of wasteful spending, $1 billion here, $1 billion there, all to babysit illegals who never should have been let into our country. The report was compiled from federal and state records, media reports, and other information. It sheds light on the taxpayer burden. 16.8 to 29 million illegal immigrants currently residing inside the United States, creating that burden. And the costs come from healthcare, housing, education, other welfare programs across numerous jurisdictions. All of these millions of illegal aliens that now live amongst you are living higher and higher on the hog. 600,000 have entered during fiscal year 2023 alone. That does not include the 900,000 who entered legally and applied for asylum. I guess that we call that legally with quotes, because they came here to abuse our asylum system, and they're just set free in the interior. The system is rigged. It exists to facilitate invasion, and that is exactly what we are now enduring. So the Biden administration and Secretary Mayorkas sit on open borders, and then we get stuck with the costs. The federal government, state governments, local governments, no one's getting off here without paying part of the tab. In New York City alone, Democrat Mayor Eric Adams has stated that the cost of illegal aliens could hit $12 billion in the next 3 years. And that's just with the current flow. There's no sign that it's slowing. Could be getting worse. And they're giving services to these illegals for everything under the sun, including laundry services for illegals. If you're a New York City taxpayer, you keep working. You keep paying your taxes so that the illegal aliens can get their laundry paid for. Of course, hospital and emergency room visits rank among the highest costs that these illegal aliens generate. I learned that firsthand when I was in Yuma, Arizona. We heard that oftentimes these illegal aliens require three times the amount of resources to discharge them safely. Every bed they take is a bed that an American can't, and we're having to drive farther and further to get our health care while a lot of these places are jammed up, overcrowded, and overrun. And then not only do you not get the service, you get the higher costs. Imagine what a grift that is. So they open up the border, bring these people in, you bear these high costs, and then you don't even get access to the services that you're paying for at rates of multiples. The report shows that the cost of education for around 3.8 million illegal immigrants that aren't proficient in English, totaled over $59 billion. In the era of the Democrats' commitment to defunding our police, the stress of illegal immigration is costing $19 billion to our law enforcement budgets and our police budgets. Given the state of violent crime in our country and the dangerous reality on our streets, I mean, the Secret Service was involved in a shooting over a carjacking, like within the last 48 hours in our nation's capital. I wouldn't say that our police have the time and money and resources to spare for this kind of crap. Biden and the Democrats, and even some weak Republicans, they wake up every morning, they see the dangerous reality in our city streets, and they choose not to put a stop to it. Instead, they choose to enable this illegal immigration, and it stresses our police departments, and it terrorizes our citizens. As I said earlier, this report is very frustrating. Every American should read it and be similarly concerned. We have got to put a stop to it. We have to close the loopholes and allow the Department of Homeland Security to do its job, activate ICE, and do the deportations that are necessary. This is an invasion. There is no greater civilization-altering issue facing our country than this. We cannot afford another year of open borders and illegal occupation of America, subsidized by the American people. We have to take a stand against it, and certainly this report gives us every basis from an evidentiary and data standpoint to do so. It is a necessity. We also want to cover a story from the state of New York where state government is engaging in activity that is not a necessity and indeed quite dangerous. Listen to New York Governor Kathy Hochul talk about the new surveillance state they're creating in the Granite State. I'm sorry, in the Empire State. Take a listen.
Also, we're very focused on the data we're collecting from surveillance efforts, what's being said on social media platforms. And we have launched an effort to be able to counter some of the negativity and reach out to people when we see hate speech being spoken about on online platforms. Our media analysis, our social media analysis unit has ramped up its monitoring of sites to catch incitement to violence, direct threats to others. And all this is in response to our desire, our strong commitment to ensure that not only do New Yorkers be safe, but they also feel safe.
Okay, so there is a troubling continuum here. First, our national security apparatus, CIA, NSA, they developed all of these surveillance tools and they sought all of these authorities to be able to gather signals intelligence, process it, analyze it, categorize conduct in various ways. And they told us that they needed these capabilities, technologies, and authorities to direct that activity overseas to some terrorist in some Central Asian cave that might be planning an attack on the United States. And so Congress came together, passes the Patriot Act. They go off and do that. But then they bring a lot of those capabilities home. And we woke up one day and larger portion of our federal government was trying to convince us that the MAGA grandmother next door was a terrorist, or the parent at the school board meeting, or the traditional Catholic in worship. And so then you saw the federal government, whether it was in response to January 6th, really abuse those authorities and reorient those anti-terrorism teams in a concerning way. What you just heard from New York Governor Kathy Hochul is the really troubling next iteration of that, where left-wing states are going to try to hire those folks out of NSA or CIA or FBI and get them involved in state-level surveillance and analysis of people's speech and their political views and their associations. We have to fight against this, and it's not enough to just fight against it at the federal level. We need people in state government standing up against what you just heard from Kathy Hochul, standing up for the privacy rights of our citizens. Now, there are some times when those privacy rights of our citizens end up being twisted and turned and cavorted in ways we never would have imagined, and in ways that actually are harmful to the most fundamental institution in American life, and that is the family. I've introduced legislation called the Parents' Right to Know Act, because under a federal law that had been misinterpreted called the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, we were getting more and more school districts telling parents that the parents didn't have a right to know about the counseling services being accessed by students. I'm sorry, if you send your kid off to public school, you have a right to know what is going on there. You have a right to know what their grades are, what classes they're taking, what their behavior looks like, what extracurriculars they're involved in, what field trips they go on. And so sure as hell you have a right to know if some school counselor is engaging in a particular type of effort. This came to my attention through a story I heard from a young student who attended one of my recent events in Northwest Florida. She was in about the sixth grade. She came to me and said, look, you know, I'm not a girly girl. I don't have the long hair. I don't dress the same as the other girls. But I'm tired of every counselor at school and every teacher trying to corner me and tell me I'm gay. Like, I'm in the sixth grade. I'm not gay. I'm just focused on being a student. And there is a coercive effect to what we have seen, what I have heard directly from my constituents, from elements of public education. And that should not happen. And you know what? The best defense with some counselor or teacher trying to say weird things or do things with your kids is to know what they're saying and doing. And so my legislation would clarify that the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act does not in any way impair the right of a parent to know the counseling that their student is getting. And particularly in times like this, where more and more people that are in public education and in counseling are veering bizarrely left, I think that this type of clarification to federal law so it is not overused and weaponized against parents is absolutely necessary. Thanks to everyone for joining us today. You can always help share our content by sending it out to your contact lists, to your friends, to folks on social media. Of course, make sure that you are subscribed, that you give us a 5-star rating on any listening platform, and leave any feedback you have in the comments. Our team loves to go through that, gives us ideas for other elements of Congress to bring forward and give you an honest, clear, and fair report on. Thanks again for joining. Roll the credits.